All right. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to my talk about Roslyn. I'm Bartosz Metz, and I'm very happy to see so many people show up this early for quite a technical talk. How many of you are actually familiar with writing code analyzers and code fixes in Roslyn? Okay, just a few. How many of you know what Roslyn is? Okay, yeah, good. So Roslyn is the new .NET compiler platform, which underpins both the .NET or the C# and Visual Basic compilers. They're completely rewritten and managed code now. It's all open source on GitHub, github.com/.NET/Roslyn. And so what we're going to do today is actually plug in to the compiler pipeline to actually add a custom analyzer, which is something you can actually ship with your libraries, for example. If you have a library and your library has certain caveats or certain use patterns that you want to discourage people from using, you can actually ship in your NuGet package, for example, a code analyzer that will load inside Visual Studio. And just like any other language service, it will provide red squiggles and, like, you know, all sorts of tips for people to actually make their code better. And so what we're going to do today is just start one of these from scratch. And in fact, just to sort of, you know, add a little bit of adrenaline, I was actually in the speaker room yesterday. And I could sort of go for, like, the standard, you know, samples of, like, inserting curly braces and suggesting to use name of the C# 6.0 feature to sort of simplify your code in place where you can. But those have become a little bit old, I think. So I was talking to a couple of people, like, you know, Martin over here and Chris van der Mast, a couple of co-speakers about, like, what would be a good analyzer to actually write. And so we sort of decided on this, or actually Martin came up with the brilliant idea of using a code analyzer to actually check for a typical use pattern that people are maybe not aware of, like, you know, being, you know, a caveat. It may produce some different results. Actually, how many of you are aware of a change to the for each lambda capturing semantics in C# 5.0? Anyone? Yeah, a couple. So, like, it's very similar to this case, but this is a case that we intentionally don't want to fix because the for loop has certain semantics that, you know, have been there since 1.0 and predate actually C# all the way to C. And so if you write this piece of code here, can you see what the problem potentially could be? Like, what do you think it should print? Exactly. It will print random stuff because I over here is actually declared in the outer scope, if you will, like, you know, a scope associated with the for statement. And so the main thread is actually incrementing I, and all of those tasks are actually seeing that same shared variable. And so it could print, if you're very, very lucky, it could print 0 to 9. But more often than not, it will just print 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, because you're basically capturing, you know, that same shared location. And so as I execute this, well, I'm very unlucky today. It's all 10s, but, you know, sometimes you may see a 9 sneak in there. If you have a super slow machine, you may actually see, like, even an 8. That's a typical kind of problem that you may run into. And so what we want to do is we want to suggest the user to actually rewrite this to something like I closure equals I, and then use I closure over here, which will actually produce the right result. Well, of course, the first thing is also the right result because it's consistent with language semantics, but this may be the result that you want to have. And so we want to point this out using a code analyzer. We want to put, like, some squiggle underneath I saying, like, ah, this could be not what you expected to do. Do you want me to change this thing? And then we'll change it for you, okay? So that's what we want to build. The nice thing about this type of code analyzer is that it's not just a syntactic thing. We'll have to do a syntax transformation to actually turn this form into the one that I've just written over here just a moment ago. But we'll also have to do a lot of interesting things, like, you know, search for occurrences of a variable inside the body of a loop, inside the lambda, inside the body of the loop, and, you know, sort of like quite some semantic analysis as well, where we have to correlate I all the way back to its declaration site and see is it one of those loop variables, okay? So that's what we're going to do. And the main ingredient to actually write those things that you sort of have to be aware of is the syntax tree. And so we have this thing here called the syntax visualizer. And we'll just take a quick look at, like, how this thing looks. The syntax visualizer, I will show you how to get it in just a moment as we start building the code analyzer. But the syntax visualizer is something you get with the Roslyn SDK. And as soon as you have it, you can click anywhere in the code and you will see what the tree structure looks like of your code, because that's the thing that we will be manipulating in our Roslyn code analyzer and code fix. And so I would like to know, like, what this for thing is. And you see over here, for is a so-called for statement, okay? And as I just navigate through this thing, you see like all the trivia and all the white space and all the individual things here. So apparently a for statement has a variable declaration, and we'll have to go in there to find all the identifiers, and then we'll have to find all the use sites of those identifiers much deeper down. So we have to go all the way into the body of this thing. So it's kind of funny to see it like just walk through the syntax there. But so that's the body of my for loop, which happens to be an expression statement. It has an invocation expression, blah, 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 for task.run. And then all the way inside of it, we have a so-called parenthesized lambda expression, which inside of it has, again, an invocation expression to console.writeline. And then ultimately in the argument list, it contains an identifier called I. So now we're sort of familiar a little bit with like all the different nodes that we can expect to see when we're sort of analyzing the syntax at runtime, okay? So now let's actually get started by trying to fix this thing completely automatically. Of course, I have it pre-canned. In fact, you know, we worked on it yesterday. I sort of started writing the analyzer, and then, you know, during my talk about C# language internals, Martin hacked away on trying to create the code fix provider. I'll try to reconstruct everything we did on stage here in like the remaining 40 minutes or so. If I run short of time, I'll show you the solution at the end, but I sort of want to walk you through the thought process because it only took us maybe in total 1 hour, 1 hour and a half to build the whole thing, including the analysis of what we had to do. So let's just get started here. So how do you get started? Well, you start by creating a new project in Visual Studio. Likely most of the time in the talk we'll not be writing code, but waiting for Visual Studios to start because we're writing plugins to those things and whatever. And at this point, oh my God, there we go. Okay, beautiful. So the way to start this kind of endeavor is by creating a new project, obviously. And you go to the extensibility tag or tab inside templates Visual C# or Visual Basic if you want to do a VB plugin. And by default, you won't see anything here other than the download the .NET compiler platform SDK, which is a beautiful project template. Because if you click that, it will just create a project with a single HTML page in it with a ginormous button download here. And then you click on it, you get a V6, you install it, you restart Visual Studio, and then you get those other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 other items in this dialog, okay? So that's what you do. And then you have to pick what you want to write. You can write refactorings, we won't focus on that. You can write standalone analysis tools, which are just command line tools that can actually do code analysis. But I want to write an analyzer with a code fix. Analyzer is a thing that gives you a light bulb saying something's off here. The code fix is when you click on the light bulb, here's how you fix it, okay? So that's what we're going to build. It will be packaged as a V6 and a NuGet, so you can ship it with your library. I'm not going to do any of that, that stuff here. I'm just going to run it locally without any deployment story, okay? Tech Days Roslyn Demo is how we'll call it. And by default, you will get a beautiful code analyzer that's darn useful. It will actually suggest the user that, oh my God, you have a type name here, like class program, and you use lowercases in program. I would like to suggest you to change this all to uppercases. Complete nonsense, anti-pattern, has no meaning whatsoever. We're still creating the project, so I have to brabble a little bit. But here you go, like that's what it just created. Let me actually run this thing so you can see what it sort of looks and feels like. But so what we want to build is those kind of things, right? Those light bulbs. And in fact, all the light bulbs that you see here in Visual Studio are built using Roslyn. So you can do exactly the same things, the same experience as whatever is available in Visual Studio. So you become a complete first-class citizen. Now this default example, I'll actually run it once, you know, even I may regret it because it's going to take a while. but what this thing is going to do, let me just walk through the code in the meantime. You actually have two things. You have the analyzer, which is looking at your project to sort of suggest you to make a certain change. And then you click on that thing, and that will invoke the so-called, over here, code fix provider, this thing. So the code fix provider is the thing that will do the action. In this case, it's called make uppercase. I'm not sure whether I'm connected to the web and it's really downloading symbols or whatever, but you can say like over here, like make uppercase. And on the other hand, we have the analyzer, and that's the one that actually figures things out. So while this thing is actually starting, you will see over here that an analyzer basically has an initialize, and we'll have to change it in just a moment. And there you can actually say, and I'm going to show you now what this analyzer does. It's going to be a little bit of concurrency, so you know, It's early in the morning, you'll have to wake up anyway, so yeah, it's no problem, right? But here you go, like that's our test project that we want to do. And what I want to have over here at the top, like what I don't want to have is the default thing here, which is this, okay? This is the thing that basically tells you to make something uppercase, right? And what you can see is, first of all, the light bulb with the squiggle saying, like, this doesn't look right. And then when you click on the light bulb, it invokes my codefix provider, and we suggest an alternative. The alternative is a transformation of the syntax tree, and we'll actually do a diff between the original syntax tree and the new syntax tree to give you this red-green kind of view to show how it will change. And then you can click on it, or you can even say, do it across my whole project. And so you can click on it over here, and then the codefix provider takes effect and actually gives the new syntax tree. Visual Studio stitches it in, and that's the end of the story. So that's kind of our contract. Give me light bulbs, and tell me what to do when you click on light bulbs. Okay? Analyzers, codefixes. Okay? In fact, I already have my preparation sitting here. Like, you know, my instance. So I'll actually create a second one that does exactly the same, but you can already see that's what we want to do. And I'm trying to reconstruct this whole thing by hand. As you can see, this is what the experience will have to look like. This is the fix that we're going to build, okay? If I click on this thing, poof, there we go. Problem goes away. Like, you know, that's what we want to build. Good. So we'll actually see two of those drop-downs later from my preparation, like, you know, where I did it offline together with Martin, and then we'll actually have the other one, the new one that we're creating. Okay, let me close this thing and see how we're going to do this. Okay, where do you start with all of this stuff? Well, the best thing to do to start is actually to reduce all the noise, so we actually get rid of all of this, you know, beautiful commenting, which we don't care about, right? So it fits on one screen, much better. In fact, the next thing you will likely do is sort of bike shedding the whole thing and sort of go to the resources file and sort of change all those warnings that you want to give, like what do you want to render over there? So, you know, this thing, type name, contains lowercase. Some stuff is wrong with closures. That will clearly make a difference from my preparation kind of thing, so you'll see both of them, right? Like, you know, closures, be aware, okay? And then, you know, variable, whatever the variable name is captured in a wonky way in your loop. Exclamation mark. Okay, will be clearly different from the previous thing that I have, so you will sort of see that my code is actually doing something. Okay, so that's what we want to sort of tell the user. The category of this thing is not about naming, it's actually about usage. We had to figure that out yesterday, what the right category was. So usage is the type of, you know, warning that we want to give people. And so that's kind of, you know, everything set up, but now we have to do the real stuff, of course. In the initialize, you get something called the context. And that's basically where you sort of get parachuted into the editor, and it tells you, please initialize your extension and tell me what you want to do. And you can do a whole bunch of things here. One thing you can do is you can register, for example, a symbol action or a semantic model action or a syntax tree action and so forth. Well, what I will do here is I want to analyze particular syntax nodes in the tree. I want to analyze all the for loops, right? For every for loop that occurs in the code, I want to do some analysis to see whether it's subject to that kind of caveat that people may fall into. So I want to use the register syntax node action over here instead of the symbol action. So this default thing of, like, you know, telling people to uppercase their type names and whatever is actually a symbol action. You see, it's a symbol action. And then for every symbol that occurs in the document of type named type, like class and struct and interface, those are named types, it will actually do a callback here. And you can sort of see the dialogue here, right? You know, in the callback, you will sort of figure out, does this thing have a problem? It has a lowercase character, oh my God. I want to instantiate this diagnostic and I want to report it. That's your interface contract. We'll call you with whatever you want to analyze. You run some analysis and you report at the end. So I'm going to do register syntax node action over here. And what I actually want to do next, let me actually just take a closer look here. I want to do an analyze node. That's going to be my method name. And I want to do it for certain syntax kinds. You see there's a params array over here of the syntax kinds that you want to analyze. So you have to tell Visual Studio, please call me back for those types of nodes, not for everything. Otherwise, this becomes very chatty. So we're going to say over here, you know, we're going to say, what's the title of that thing again? Syntax kind, yeah, here we go. Syntax kind for statement, okay? So we're just going to have a look at all the for statements in the code. And I'll just control dot this thing into existence by just generating a method. There we go. And we get something passed in called the context, syntax node analysis context. And here we have to do pretty much the same thing as before. We actually have to take a look at, you know, whatever we got to see whether there's a problem. So how are we going to do that? Well, first of all, if you go into the context, you can get the node being analyzed. And I've already filtered them down to four statements. Of course, if I use an enum here, you know, and I sort of like specify, not an enum, if I specify a comma-separated list of other language constructs, you'll have to do some type checks inside of this thing to see is it this case or that other case. In this case, I know it's always going to be a for statement, right? So I can convert this thing to a for statement syntax, okay? And I'll call that thing FSS. Okay, beautiful. That's my for statement. And next I want to check whether that for statement has any variables that it's declaring. Now, a very important thing here is we can't just go by the names, right? Because you may have some other variable called I, which is not one of those loop variables. So we actually have not to just get the syntax, we also have to get some meaningful thing. And that will be called a symbol. Like the symbol will be the thing that can be used to correlate use sites and declaration sites. If you have int I equals 5 and int j equals 3, and then later you have I plus j, is that I and j actually referring to those things you've declared, or maybe to an intermediate lambda, which also has a parameter I passed in? So you'll have to be able to sort of look at those things as well. So to do that, we'll have to get the semantic model. And the semantic model is the place where you can ask questions like, what does this name really bind to? What does it mean? You can ask things like, is this an implicit conversion, an explicit conversion? Like all sorts of things that have to do with the meaning of the language, not just the shape of the language. So that's the semantic model. And finally, we're actually going to get all the variables from this thing. And so FSS is actually the for statement syntax. If I just have 12 to for statement syntax, you see at the top here all the properties which are the constituents of a for statement, including tokens for the open and the close parentheses and where the for keyword sits, all sorts of things. But in this case, I want to get the declaration part, which is the first thing before the first semicolon. So I'm going to go into the declaration where I can find all my variables that are being declared. Okay, so now I have my variables, but the variables actually have names, but I want to get the symbols because I want to have like semantically sound analyses to find all the occurrences of those symbols in the body of the loop. So I'm actually going to get the symbols by taking all the variables and projecting them from variable onto. And now I can actually go to this semantic model and actually say, please, semantic model, give me the declared symbol that corresponds to this particular variable. Okay? So this will give me an IEnumerable of I symbol. And those are things that I can now walk up to any other variable in my program and say, does that I mean the same thing as this symbol? Okay? Symbols are those, you know, things that correlate like declaration sites and use sites and all of that stuff. Now, I want to check for all of those at some point. I'm just going to pour this into a hash set of I symbol over here. And actually, I'm going to minimize the solution explorer thing here. So here we go. We actually have our symbols. So next, what do we have to do in order to raise that light bulb? We have to look at the body of the for statement, right, to see whether you use I somewhere inside the lambda. Now, how are we going to walk through this whole statement or syntax tree? The answer is you'll use a walker. A walker is a kind of visitor. How many of you are familiar with the visitor pattern? Yeah. It's kind of a visitor that does recursion into all the nodes up from that point. So we want to start ultimately from FSS dot statement, which is the body of our loop, and we want to give it to something called walker. We tried to come up with a you know, interesting name for a walker, and we decided to go for Johnny Walker. You know, so the C# syntax walker will be called Johnny, and we'll use our nice Johnny over here to take in the semantic model, because we'll have to ask questions about all variable uses to see whether their symbol corresponds to the declared symbol. So I'll pass in the model, and then the hash set of all the I symbols, you know, that I want to analyze. And I'll just do model equals model, symbols equals symbols, blah, 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 you know. You know, this is all like, you know, boilerplate kind of stuff. But ultimately, when I have done my walker thing over here, what I want to do is have, you know, an instance of my Johnny, right? Create my new instance, and then I want to do Johnny.walk. Ah, no, it's not called walk, it's called visit, you know. like Johnny.visit of my body of my statement. And at this point, you know, my thing over here is actually this walker is actually responsible for, and I need to give it symbols and my semantic model symbols. This thing will be responsible to raise the light bulbs on every single use of a variable inside the lambda that comes out of the declared, you know, variables out of my for loop, okay? So how do we do that? Well, we have to sort of track whether we're inside lambdas, right? So we'll have to keep a little bit of state. Every time we sort of go into the body of a lambda, we have to sort of remember. We're sitting inside the body of a lambda. Here, uses of I, one of those local variables, can actually cause grief, okay? So we're going to override visit parenthesized lambda expression. In fact, there are more things. Visit simple lambda expression is another kind of lambda expression that doesn't have parentheses on the left-hand side. There's also an override visit anonymous method expression, which is the C# 2.0 syntax to do the same thing. Like, all of those are suspect kind of things, okay? And so for all of these, as soon as we sort of walk through the syntax and we sort of cross the boundary of a lambda, we want to keep a little bit of state saying we're inside a lambda, okay? So I'm just going to have over here a private Boolean saying whether I'm in a lambda. And I want to set is lambda to true at the beginning, and at the end I want to set it back to false, but not quite because we can have nesting. So I'll just remember whether I was in a lambda, and then at the end I'll revert to saying whether I was in a lambda. So we can enter multiple lambdas and sort of remember that we're inside a lambda. And then when we get out, after we visit all the children, we sort of can undo that flag, right? So that's what we're going to do here. And I'm just going to copy, you know, this a little bit. You know, there's no point in abstracting this thing out any further. You know, I'll just copy this whole thing. So those are all the places where, you know, uses of variables can cause grief. Okay? But I still need to look at my variables, of course, right? What are the variables? Well, let's actually take a look. You know, I've sort of forgotten at this point, like, how the syntax tree looks like. Like, this thing, for example, is the use of a variable, node, right? Let me just go to view. Other windows, syntax visualizer, here we go. I'll just click on node, and it will tell me that this thing is an identifier name. Okay, fine. So I'll have to now override this method that will actually get called for every identifier that we're visiting, that we're walking over. So override visit identifier name. Okay. So now for every identifier in my program, I will see it. In my previous example, it will be for task and for run and for console and write line and I. For all of these, I'll have to check, like, are those variables that are closed over in some funky way? So what I can do here is, of course, I can say, first of all, if I'm in a lambda, I care about it. Otherwise, I don't care about it. Let's get out of here as quick as possible, right? Like, only when I'm in lambdas, I do really care. What are we going to do? We're going to say node. Well, the node is an identifier named syntax. Wouldn't it be nice if I can now walk to my semantic model, right, and ask it like, hey, what's the symbol for this thing? Okay. What does that mean? Well, if I have an identifier, I can ask what's the symbol, which will reveal what it means, right? If I have I in a constructor, for example, I may have this.i equals I. One occurrence of I means the field, the other occurrence of I means the local. Right? Like, you know, so we have to sort of distinguish those kind of things. So we're going to go to the model to say, like, this symbol, do we know anything about it? Because syntax trees can be invalid as the user is typing, I'll do some defensive null checks here. You know, if the symbol is not null, I want to do something. Okay? And if the symbol is not null and the symbols that I have passed into my constructor contain this particular symbol, it's one of those variables that's declared inside my for loop. At this point, I want to bring up the light bulb saying, you're playing a dangerous game here, my friend, okay? And that's actually symbol.symbol, okay? In fact, if you take a look at symbol, because when the user is typing, there can be multiple symbols that are valid, right? Like, you know, because they're still doing things and it's still invalid and you'll sort of guess at it, like, you know, maybe they mean this or maybe they mean that. Then you get a whole bunch of candidate symbols and reasons why we think that's a good candidate, right? Like, you know, so... If you want to, like in this particular case, like I'm doing a dot here and you see that little red squiggle, code is by default wrong all the time as the user is writing it, right? So, like, you know, we have to give you all the stuff that Visual Studio also deals with. Like, when, you know, I have some variable that I haven't declared yet and you do dot on it, we try to give you some IntelliSense based on what we think you have, right? And that's using the candidate symbols. In this case, I'm not going to bother with candidates. I'm just going to deal with code that's already in good shape. So now we found our dangerous places, and we're just gonna report our diagnostic. Let me just copy this whole thing here, which I had from the sample, and then get rid of the sample. Okay, we don't need that anymore. That's that uppercase nonsense. Here we go. How do you create a diagnostic? Well, you refer to that rule that was created at the top here. This rule is a diagnostic descriptor which has a title, an ID, and all of that kind of stuff. Inside C Sharp, those IDs are CS0114 and those kind of things, like the error codes, right? You know, those are the diagnostic IDs. So you want to have something a little bit unique here. Not a little bit, unique. You have a title, a message format, and a category. That's all the stuff that you want to show to the user. So we just instantiate one of those diagnostics at the bottom here, and we have to give it a location. Why do I have to give it a location? I have to give it a location for Visual Studio to render the squiggle, right? Like, that's where things are wrong. Like, we want to sort of have that squiggle sitting underneath that location. So I'll basically just go to node and call getLocation. So I'll just ask, what's the location of this node? And that basically gives me a span, you know, basically a start position, end position, that kind of stuff. And I also want to give it a name, node.identifier. ToString will work, I think, or like, you know, identifier.text, you know. That's the identifier, like, you know, the I that I'm using. Like, you know, that's what I want to stuff into that format string. I had a format string a moment ago. Let me actually go back to that to just show you. Like, variable 0 is captured in a wonky way. I want to have variable I with the name that the user wrote there. So I just want to have a little bit of more information here, okay? So that's what I put in here, and now I still need the context to report the diagnostic, and, you know, mea culpa, I forgot to pass that whole thing in. So I'll just pass the syntax context also to the constructor of my Johnny. You know, here we go, the context. I need that thing to report the diagnostic. Put this thing over here, and I would recommend you to try to write some, you know, refactoring or what have you that automatically adds things to a constructor and adds fields. That's an exercise left to the reader or the watcher. And so at this point, you know, the whole thing is done. So what have we done? We asked Visual Studio, please call me back whenever there's a for loop. We look at the for loop and we say, like, what are the variables declared? We get the symbols for it, so we can actually find all the use sides of that thing. We use a walker to go over the whole darn thing. We track whether we're inside lambdas, because outside lambdas we don't care. And if we're inside the lambda and we see use of one of those variables by using a look at the symbol, taking a look at the symbol, we say, light bulb, okay? So that's what's going on here. Now let me just try to run this thing, F5. And that's the beauty of all of this. You can set breakpoints over here, right? You know, you can set a breakpoint, F9, here, and, you know, all sorts of places. And you will basically just be debugging another instance of Visual Studio that's running your plugin to the compiler, okay? So that's what's going on here. This will take a moment again to launch, but then we're kind of halfway, and we're kind of still on time. You know, I still have 15 minutes to create the fix. But so, I hope that you get something from, you know, the way you think about this thing. Like, you want to find out what the trees are. You want to see the forest for the trees. So you first look at the syntax visualizer. And here we go. Like, I loaded my project, and it's already calling me. I saw a for loop. I went to the Johnny, and the Johnny saw an identifier name, and I'm sitting inside a lambda. And I'm being asked, console, is that something we have to worry about? Because the body of my lambda is console.writeline of I. Console, writeline, and I are identifier names. So here we'll go through it. We won't find it in our list. No diagnostic. Next one is going to be writeline. Yep. Writeline, don't care about that one. Next one is I in my body of my loop. Do I care about this one? I do. Here's my diagnostic. Okay? So what's happening now? We've just told Visual Studio, please report that something's wrong at this position with this message and this whatever, right? So here we go. There we are. And here we are. I have my squiggle, and I have my preparation, variable I possibly incorrectly captured in anonymous method inside loop body. That's what the marketing people would write. And the first thing, variable I is captured in a wonky way in your loop. That's what I wrote just now, okay? So you see, it's all working. Now, the next thing, I want to have my light bulb, right? You know, this light bulb thing here, I want to, well, make uppercase. not that, you know, like, oh, no, that's exactly, you know, what I still have sitting there in my code fix provider somewhere. Like, I want to have a sibling to this thing capture using local variable, I will say fix your mess, right? And when you click on it, it will do the same thing. So let's now build the fix your mess stuff, okay? All right, so how do we do that? That's the fix, okay? So now we found something's wrong, now we have to fix it, or help the user to fix it. So that's the code fix provider. The code fix provider first has to say, how will we call the user what he can do? I'll say fix your closures. Here we go. Right. And then you have a whole bunch of other things here. The getFixAll provider, which allows you to sort of fix all occurrences of that same diagnostic across all of your code. I'm not going to bother with that thing. But the thing that I want to change here is register code fixes async. Okay, that's where we get called back when you click on that light bulb. In fact, even before that, when you hover over the light bulb, we sort of talk to your code to see, like, what will this look like after you do your magic? So we can render this, you know, red and green stuff, okay? So how are we going to do this? We get the root of the syntax tree. We may want that at some point, so I'm just going to leave that in place. But I'm first going to ask my diagnostics, right? Those are the things I reported to Visual Studio. Like, for this particular thing, what's that diagnostic that we had, and like, what's the location where this thing happened, okay? Well, where did we actually put our squiggle? Let's remember that. We put our squiggle underneath an identifier name syntax, right? That's where we sort of put it in the use sites. So the next thing we have to do here is actually go through the root of the tree and then find that particular token at that span. So we're going to say, look in the document at that offset, which I reported, and tell me what's under the cursor over there, right? Like, we're sitting here, tell me what's there. So we sort of go back in the tree and fish out what's sitting there. So we do find token over here, okay, and then dot parent. The token is just the token, like the part of the string that contains that particular language construct. The parent is going to be a syntax tree node. Now, I know what that node is. It's an identifier, okay? So I can actually cast that thing to an identifier name syntax, and that's actually at the position where I report, I want to go back to that identifier name syntax node. Now we sort of have the context where we reported something wrong, and that's where we'll sort of start scanning the tree from to sort of find the closest and closing for statement that declares that symbol to sort of rewrite that thing. So we have to now walk up the tree at some point. Now I'm not going to do that tree walking just yet. I'm just going to first register my code fix. So how do you make a code fix? Well, here's one. This is one that's the default that comes with this template, make uppercase async, that given a document will actually do things like call a service in Visual Studio called the renamer, which will rename all occurrences of that symbol to uppercases. Like, that's what this thing does. So I'm not going to do that, but you can sort of see the structure here. Like, you know, I want to do something like, you know, fix closures async, right? I want to have a document coming in. It's going to be local to one document because a for loop doesn't stretch multiple documents. Occurrences of a type name can stretch multiple documents. So I want to fix closures given a document returning a new document that contains the fix. That's what's going to be used to render the diff. And if the user says, please do this, we'll call this thing, get the result out, and substitute his whole document for the new document, okay? So we now get a chance to sort of rewrite the whole document. And we're going to pass in the identifier name syntax, right? That's my identifier, where I sort of want to start from radiating outwards to sort of spread the goodness of my fix, okay? So that's what I want to do. I'm just going to get rid of all of this stuff for now. I'm just going to return the original document. So this thing is happy. And now I first want to register my code fix. Register code fix is what you use to tell Visual Studio, like, when you see this, when the light bulb is on and the user hovers over the light bulb, please call me, okay? So the register code fix here can take a code action. It has a title, which is what will be rendered on top of that thing. And then I'm going to pass over here using a different overload. I'm actually going to do create change document and call fix closures async, given the document and the identifier, okay? And then, whoops, identifier, like this, okay? And then there's some other thing I messed up over here, there we go. So that's how I register my code fix. I say, when you have this light bulb, I'll just find the node where I reported the issue, I'll remember that thing, and I'll report to Visual Studio, here's a code fix for you. And that code fix, when you click on it or when you preview it, it will actually call this piece of code here, okay? So now what do we do inside that piece of code? That's where the interesting stuff happens. So we have a use side of a variable that's potentially incorrect. We have I. What's the first thing we need to do? We need to find the for loop that introduced I. We have to sort of reverse engineer our analysis and sort of go back up the tree to find the for loop that introduces that variable. How do we do that? Well, first of all, I'll need my semantic model again. So I'll call that sem, called doc.getSemanticModelAsync, and then await that thing. Okay, so I got my semantic model. That's good. Now I can ask questions about the meaning of names and stuff. And now I have my identifier here. So I'll actually go to my semantic model and get the symbol for that identifier. So that's the symbol. Now I have the symbol. Now I want to start walking up the tree to find the for statement that declares that variable. Okay, so that's going to be my for statement. And I'm actually going to start from my identifier, right? I'll go to the ancestors and self, so I'm going to go parent, 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 parent. I'll find all the parents that are of type for statement, and I want to have the first for statement that contains a declaration for the variable I'm reporting. Because I may have nested ones, right? Like a lambda containing a for loop, and then, you know, a for loop around that lambda, and so on. Like, I need to find the right one. So, given the for statements, go to the declarations again. Declarations have variables. And then, you know, for all those variables that I have on a for statement, check whether the variable, when I go to the semantic model and I get the declared symbol for that variable, when it's equal to the variable I'm searching for, then I have found my declaring for statement, right? I'm walking up, I'm going through all the variables of the for statement, see what is declared here, and if I find a match, that's the for statement that I have to rewrite, okay? And that's symbol dot symbol, okay? So there we go. So now I'm going up. I have my for statement that I have to massage a little bit, okay? So how am I going to massage the for statement? First thing to think of is, what does it need to look like? I need to introduce a variable declaration to do something like var I closure equals I. That's that thing I need to insert to fix the problem. And then I need to change the body of the loop to a block containing the original body, right, and that additional statement. Okay. Plus, I have to replace all occurrences of variables. Okay. And that we have to do in 7 minutes. Whew. Okay, good. So, how do we do that? Well, first of all, we're going to have to make sure that we have a new identifier. So let me start with creating a new identifier, okay? And we're going to go to something called a syntax factory. If we have to make new syntax notes, we go to the factory and we ask to create a new one, okay? And so we're going to create an identifier over here, and we're going to take our original identifier. We'll actually get the identifier's text, and we'll just add closure to the end. Now, in reality, I would have to go to the semantic model and check whether I'm not going to introduce a conflict with an existing variable and then disambiguate. I'm going to skim over that detail. You have the semantic model. You can figure it out, okay? So we have the new identifier. That's good. Next thing to do is let's actually take a look at the body of my for statement, okay? So the for statement, I need to find all occurrences of the original symbol and replace them for my new identifier. To do that, I will use something like a Johnny, like a walker, but something different. We have something else but a walker. A walker goes over a tree in a read-only fashion. It's like a tourist in town, right? But you also want to have somebody who can change the buildings on the way, right? So we're going to use a hooligan, I guess. Like, I'm not sure. Is that what it is? So we'll actually use, I'll call it the replacer, you know, to be a little bit correct. And that's going to be a C# syntax rewriter, okay? And C# syntax rewriters, you can do override visit identifier, for example. Find all the identifiers somewhere. And then you can return a new one. See? Like, you have that return statement there. So what I can do now is I can pass in over here the symbol we're looking for, right? Symbol we're looking for. The semantic model to ask questions whether things match the symbol I'm looking for. And then finally the replacement, which is my... Well, I can just do syntax token, you know, new identifier, okay? And then I wish we had something easier for this, but you know, whatever it is, it is. Here we go, new identifier, new identifier. There we go. Just create a whole bunch of read-only fields. That's all Roslyn as well, this thing, right? You know, that's a code analyzer that sees you have something. Let's suggest creating a field or this or that or the other thing. And so now that we're seeing an identifier inside our syntax tree, we're going to say, like, well, dear model, give me the symbol corresponding to this, not speculative alias info, get me the symbol for this node. Okay, here's the symbol. And, you know, if the symbol dot symbol not equals null, because the user could be doing a whole bunch of stuff, you know, and things could not be in a complete valid state yet. But if I have a symbol, I can now check whether that's the symbol we have to replace. In fact, I don't have to do this null. I can just check, is it the symbol we want to replace? In that case, we'll return the new identifier. That's going to be the thing that goes through the tree, finds all the occurrences of I that semantically match the original I, and replace them for the new identifier. And I have made a little mistake here. That's not a syntax token. That's a syntax node. Problem solved. Okay, so that's the replacer. Good. So now we have to apply our replacer to the body of our for statement. For statement has a body. It's called statement. I can apply my new replacer to it by giving it the symbol I'm looking for, the model I'm using. It's called sem and the new identifier. And I'm going to visit that for statement, the body of the for statement, and now I have the new body. Okay? Not sure what I did wrong over here. I have to do symbol over here. Syntax factory identifier is a syntax token. It's actually not identifier, it's identifier name over here. Okay? So there we go. That's what will give me the new body with all the occurrences of I replaced for my new variable. Now the next thing I have to do, and we're getting a little short on time here. There's still a little bit of syntax tree to build here. Actually, that's the syntax tree that Martin hacked on while I was giving my talk yesterday. Let me actually take one piece of liberty here and actually copy that little piece, because it's all the same as what we've sort of done before. It's syntax factory dot this dot that dot the other thing. Okay? So what's the this, that, and the other thing that we have to use? It's this stuff. Okay? So let me just copy from here. No, it's not like I'm giving up, but, you know, I'll walk you through it in the remaining 2.5 minutes, you know, like, here we go. Okay, so that was actually really good. Let's just put all of that stuff in place. So I called it different, not new body, I called it new statement, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I also had a cast over here to make this statement syntax, okay, whatever. So the first thing I also check is whether the body that I have, that new statement, right, is it a block? Because I need to insert a new variable declaration. And actually, in my case, it was not a block. I had a for statement with just a single statement inside of it. I need to add a block with curly braces in case I want to insert something there. So I need to check whether it's a block to begin with. If it's not a block, let's create a block, right? Like, you know, let's just wrap whatever the user had in a block with curlies around it. And then next over here, the next thing we actually do is, okay, there's a little bit of things that are off here, but we go to the syntax factory to create a local declaration statement, okay? And a local declaration statement is something like this. Type name, identifier, equals something. And now if you take a look here, local variable declaration has a variable declaration. You have to give it a type name. We'll just use var here. And then we'll give it the variables that have to be put on the right-hand side. And variables are a comma-separated list of name-value pairs. In this case, it's block body equals something. What's the equals? It's an equals value clause. Okay? So what I'm creating here is something that says iClosure equals I, right? With var in front of it. That's all the code you write to do that. Now, how do you figure that thing out? Again, go to the syntax visualizer, right? You go to the syntax visualizer over here. Right, there we are. We take a look over here, we parachute into it, and we analyze this thing. Local declaration, variable declarator, variable declaration. You sort of look at the kind of things you have to hit in the syntax factory. Look at the overloads, right? So there we are. We create that thing. That used to be a different type over here. No biggie. And then at the bottom here, finally, oh, I also put some annotation here. That's kind of your ticket to look sexy, okay? If you put the formatter there, all the code you generate, it will honor all the stylistic things that the user chooses. my curly braces on the first line, my curly braces on the second line, darn it. Like, you know, that thing will actually make sure it looks consistent. You don't have to worry about where to put the curly braces and stuff. Like, it will just obey the rules of the user, okay? So then I create my new block body. I go to my original for statement, right? And in that original for statement, I say replace the original body with my new body. And now, very important thing. Very important thing. I don't mutate my data structures. In Roslyn, everything's immutable. When you do something like take the original for statement and do with statement on it, you get a new for statement, right? A whole new note. That's a copy of the original one where you substituted the body for the new body. And now you have to take that note and sort of stuff it into the original document. And that will create a new document. Because it's immutable, it can be shared across multiple threads safely. That's why we do immutable stuff here. So what we have to do is typically this with thing. With says, take the original thing, substitute the thing I want to substitute, give me a new copy. So I will have to do the same thing with my original document. I have to replace the whole syntax tree for a new syntax tree. That's just what you do here. There's a couple of helpers like, you know, replace, note, and things to make it a little bit easier. And now I have one more squiggle somewhere that I can't find. Here's my squiggle. Okay, fine. Good. There we go. So now, the big, you know, volcanic eruption. 1 minute, 20 seconds over, but you know, I'll finish in like 1 minute, or how fast Visual Studio can start, it is. It's not my fault, it's loading symbols. So. Almost. Here we go. We have Visual Studio open, right? And actually, we open our faulty code, right? We prepare the solution, important. We have our squiggle. We can click on the light bulb. Fix your closures, capture using local variable, preparation and the live coded stuff with a little copy paste at the end. Click on fix your closures, the code changes, the squiggle goes away. Press Ctrl F5, 0 to 9, in whatever order the thread pool chooses, but like our fix has been, you know, applied, the code has been rewritten, the user is happy, bug is gone, like, you know, it took 45 minutes worth of coding plus 45 minutes worth of thinking. So 1.5 hours to build this. Really amazing. Like, you know, sitting right inside Visual Studio, no effort, can be deployed using NuGet, lot of fun. Do it at the bar, do it in the sofa, do it wherever you like. Like, you know, every single light bulb in Visual Studio, that's the next thing I want you to do from now on. When you see a light bulb in Visual Studio, you think, how could I build this myself? Because that's what the Roslyn team has done. Every single light bulb is using this framework. No exceptions. All open source, it's all there. Like, remove redundant usings. It's a light bulb, right? You can build those light bulbs. Go ahead, build a lot of light bulbs. Let lights go off in the people that use your code, you know, and, you know, ship them. Do pull requests to Roslyn on GitHub, you know, ship them in the open source gallery or the Visual Studio gallery, and have lots of fun, I would say. Thank you.
Kun je niet ook de rest van de praatjes vandaag doen?